Luke chapter 9. We'll read there in just a moment. You might have noticed that Kay and Cuddy are not here today. Their son Chase and his wife Macy are in the hospital having a baby. So yeah, that's awesome. They were going to induce tomorrow if she hadn't come, but her name is Lucy, and she's on the way. And Kay texted us last night letting us know that she wasn't going to be there. And one of the most remarkable things in the text was Kay said, "I hope she comes before the Falcons game." Now, I got the impression that if she didn't come, that Kay would go ahead and stay at the hospital. But what she preferred was that she could do both. Because she could be a spectator at both events. So I guess she's a Falcons fan. I guess we may have some other Falcons fans in here. I know we have at least one Green Bay Packer fan, Wendy Williams. Any others? We got another. I was at a wedding, Taylor Vance's wedding Taylor Phillips' wedding last Sunday, and was talking with Ken and Wendy, and they were talking about that if Green Bay beat Dallas, they were going to go to the game today, and it would be good because if Dallas wins, Atlanta would have to go to Dallas to play, but if Green Bay wins, Green Bay comes here. And I was trying to figure out, do you want Green Bay to win because you think it's better for Atlanta, or are you a Green Bay fan? And Wendy was, "I'm definitely a Green Bay fan." And Ken's definitely a Falcons fan. And I bring that up to say, do you know how it feels when you feel like somebody's against you? Sometimes we want to know where people stand. You know, are you for me or are you against me? That's good information to have sometimes. Because sometimes we feel like people are against us, and we know how that feels, right? You know, in this really divided political climate, we see it all the time. It's played out on Facebook all the time. And you know how it feels if you feel like people are against you. Do you know how it feels if you feel like someone is against you? Am I making you uncomfortable? If so, that probably means that you feel like people are against you, or at least you have the capacity for empathy, and that you know how it feels. You know, we in the last couple of days, we had women marching really on every continent, even Antarctica, there was a march. And marching for women's rights, because that's one of the things that people do when they feel like people are against them. And, there's one of the signs that stood out to me that they have is, you know, "Accept my existence or expect my resistance." Because that's the kind of thing you do when you feel like people are against you. Another sign, probably my favorite sign I saw, was "If male politicians gave birth, I'd be at brunch right now." That'll sink in a minute. But I think we are feeling a little bit uncomfortable. Good. I mean, I wanted us to feel a little bit uncomfortable and to be thinking about what it feels, because you feel it in here if you feel like somebody's against you. Now, I want you to think for a minute. What would it feel like if you were convinced, or at least you were told by reputable sources, that God was against you? See, that was the reality for many people in Jesus' world. When Jesus arrived on the scene, many people were being told by reputable sources that God was against them. In their culture, if you were even sick or disabled, you're obviously under a curse. If you're blind, you're obviously under a curse from God. If you're poor, if you're an alien, you are obviously under a curse. God is against you. And then Jesus came on the scene, and he turned that understanding upside down, and he had a completely there was a completely different character to him and to the community that he was gathering. After John the Baptist was thrown into prison, and it seems like he was having second thoughts about, man, you know, I've given everything to prepare the way for Jesus, and now I've ended up in prison, and it wasn't looking good. He probably knew he was going to die. And he sent some of his friends to Jesus and said, are you really the one that we were expecting, or are we going to expect somebody else? And Jesus says, go back and tell John what you see. And I love the way that Eugene Peterson does this. It's Matthew 11, verse 5. Go and tell John what you see. The blind see, the lame walk, lepers are cleansed, the deaf hear, the dead are raised, and the wretched of the earth learn that God is on their side. And what Jesus was saying is, go tell John. This is how John can have confidence that he's given everything for the right cause. Is that what you see in my life and in my ministry is the very thing that was always prophesied for centuries. It was good news and glory for Israel, but a light to the Gentiles, to the whole world, to gather the whole world to a God of love and redemption. So we've been talking about our theme of the year, gather, and that Jesus came to build a gathering. And that the first followers of Jesus, you know, devoted themselves to gathering. They ate together, prayed together, fellowshiped together, dug into the scriptures together. But they were a gathering. But the character of that gathering was that they themselves were gatherers. They gathered together. But one of their purposes was to gather to include other people. And Jesus addresses this topic, but as he does it, he seemingly, at least on the surface, seems to contradict himself. Luke 9:50, Jesus says, whoever is not against you is for you. And then just two chapters later, Luke 11:23, he says, he who is not with me is against me. So I want us to look at those two passages and try to reconcile this surface contradiction. You know, one of the things that infuriated the religious people of Jesus' time is how he seemed to accept and include people that they rejected and excluded. You know, he treated people in the out-group like they were in the in-group. And that can really tick you off if you're true in-groupers, right? Look in Luke 9, starting in verse 46. I guess I better turn there. An argument started among the disciples as to which of them would be the greatest. Jesus, knowing their thoughts, took a little child and had him stand beside him. Then he said to them, whoever welcomes this little child in my name welcomes me, and whoever welcomes me welcomes the one who sent me. For he who is least among you all, he is the greatest. Master, said John, we saw a man driving out demons in your name, and we tried to stop him, because he's not one of us. Do not stop him, Jesus said, for whoever is not against you is for you. You know, right before this, it says Jesus had just revealed to them that he was going to be betrayed. But they didn't ask him, and they didn't understand it, but they were afraid to ask him about it. Because they were kind of gripped with fear and insecurity. And when you're gripped with fear and insecurity, all kinds of things come out. One of the things that happens when you're gripped with fear and insecurity is you argue a lot. And they started arguing. because they're insecure, and so they started thinking about, I don't just want to be great, I want to be the greatest. And they started going back and forth about who's going to be the greatest. It's kind of a classic case of kind of creating boundaries or these hard lines to divide the in-group of the greatest from the out-group of everybody else who's not the greatest. But Jesus employs a visual aid, and he has a little child come and stand among them. And, you know, in that culture, the child would have no perceived social status or greatness at all. And Jesus didn't even say, I don't want you to be great. But he said, if you want to be great, become like this little child. You're not going to become great by arguing about who's the greatest. You actually will become great in the way that I want you to be great, and I want everybody to be great, but the way to do that is through humility. And to become like this child. And then he says, and whoever welcomes or gladly includes this little child in my name welcomes me, and whoever welcomes me welcomes the one who sent me. Then he adds, for he who is least among you all, he is the greatest. You know, he completely short circuits any attempt to build some kind of ladder of status for them to climb up. If you want to be great, do this, this, and this. Then you'll really be great. He completely goes the other direction. He doesn't want to give them this ladder of status and domination so that they can judge and exclude. In fact, he turns the ladder upside down. And he didn't stop with children. He ate with people considered to be sinners, tax collectors, prostitutes, drunks, Samaritans. He shocked people by who he would associate, who he would gather at his table. But then look what happens right after that. John seems to be grasping the implications of what Jesus is saying. And he says, Jesus, we saw somebody driving out demons in your name, but he's not one of us. So you're going to be so proud of us, Jesus. Guess what we did? We tried to stop him. And he was getting his back all ready to be patted, you know. And Jesus said, you did what? He goes, yeah, he's not in our group. And he was trying to do things that our group's the one that does that, you know. Driving out demons in your name. They were doing it, so we made them stop. And Jesus said, don't stop him. If they're not against us, they're for us. Whoever is not against you is for you. So in the space of a few minutes here, Jesus twice rejects and corrects an exclusive in-group attitude among his followers. You know, first for seeking the exclusive status of I am the greatest. And then second of all, for opposing someone for not being, you know, one of us, not from my group, not from our group. They're not in our group. They're not doing it our way. And sometimes connected with that is, that seems to be happening, but we're not getting credit for it. And I think we can have a tendency to discount or to ignore, or to not acknowledge God being at work outside of our group. I think all groups can, that's just a human tendency. But you know, Jesus didn't really include people. He didn't eat with them, touch them, heal them as a blanket approval of all their behaviors. And he also, because he wanted them to understand that they could be healed, that they could be transformed, that they could be changed. He loved them where they were. But he had a vision for the kind of life that they could live in, as he told the woman caught in adultery, "I don't condemn you, but go and leave your life of sin." He wanted them to know that God was on their side. Jesus seems to understand, and he practically lives out what the Pharisees seemed completely unable to grasp, and that is rejection hardens people and acceptance softens them. Jesus met people where they were with acceptance and love. Even the people that he was told that he shouldn't accept and he shouldn't love. But then flip over to Luke 11. You know, how do you reconcile that with what Jesus says later? "He who is not with me is against me." Luke 11, starting in verse 14. Jesus was driving out a demon that was mute. When the demon left, the man who had been mute spoke, and the crowd was amazed. But some of them said, "By Beelzebub, the prince of demons, he is driving out demons." Others tested him by asking for a sign from heaven. Jesus knew their thoughts and said to them, "Any kingdom divided against itself will be ruined, and a house divided against itself will fall. If Satan is divided against himself, how can this kingdom stand? I say this because you claim that I drive out demons by Beelzebub. Now, if I drive out demons by Beelzebub, by whom do your followers drive them out? So then, they will be your judges. But if I drive out demons by the finger of God, then the kingdom of God has come to you. When a strong man, fully armed, guards his own house, his possessions are safe. But when someone stronger attacks and overpowers him, he takes away the armor in which the man trusted and divides up the spoils. He who is not with me is against me, and he who does not gather with me scatters. He who is not with me is against me, and he who does not gather with me scatters. Here Jesus is accused of driving out demons by satanic power, by Beelzebub, the prince of demons. And Jesus says, you know, that's completely illogical. If Satan was driving out Satan, Satan would fall. Satan would have no power. Satan is not opposed to Satan. But just as a satanic kingdom would be ruined if its citizens were divided against one another, God's kingdom would be ruined if its citizens were working at opposing purposes. He's already made it clear that his way is to include, to gather, to welcome whoever would come. He's already lived out and demonstrated in his words and in his deeds that he had showed up to show the wretched of the earth that God was on their side. But if people refuse to join with Jesus in his inclusive purpose of gathering, welcoming, and reconciling in God's kingdom, then they'll be perpetuating the division, exclusion, or scattering that the kingdom has come to heal. In that way, they'd be working against Jesus. In short, Jesus says, if you have people among you who are working against you, you will be ruined. So you can't naively just include anyone. So Jesus wasn't contradicting himself, but he was pointing out a paradox. To be truly inclusive, you have to exclude exclusive people. To be truly reconciling, you can't reconcile with those who refuse reconciliation. To be successful at gathering people, you can't gather with people who scatter. Church, ecclesia, means gathering. We are the people who gather. And we are the people that we gather, and we gather also for the purpose of gathering others. But we can't gather with scatterers. It's challenging. It was a very fearful thing in Jesus' life, in his ministry, in the hearts and the minds of the disciples, and certainly in the community. As Jesus would sit down at the table with the likes of Zacchaeus to allow this woman who is sinful, who comes in and anoints Jesus' feet with expensive perfume and washes his feet with her tears and dries his feet with her hair. And people are saying, how could he let someone like that even touch him? He's obviously not from God if he would associate with those kinds of people. The Pharisees had a much neater way of doing it. Jesus' way is messy. Because life is messy, and life is messy because life's made up of people, and we are messy. Anybody in here messy besides me? All of us are messy. Hand raisers and non-hand raisers. We're all messy. It's like Jesus told in Matthew 13, Jesus told this parable of the wheat and the weeds, and he says somebody goes out and he sows good seed, and then in the middle of the night, an enemy comes in and sows weeds in the middle of the wheat. And the servants come to the master and says, Master, you want us to go and pull up all the weeds? He says, no, you can't do that, because the problem is weeds and wheat look a lot alike. And if you go pulling weeds, you're going to uproot some wheat. And what Jesus is saying is that if a little bit of wheat gets killed in the process of uprooting all the weeds, that's a price I'm not willing to pay. Let them grow up. At harvest time, it'll be obvious what's wheat and what's weeds. But Jesus, in introducing, said, it's like this with the kingdom of God. This is what the kingdom's like. See, now the Pharisees had a much neater system. He said, we're going to make it so that it's clear who's in and who's out. And in their process of drawing these heavy lines to know exactly who's in and who's out, Jesus is saying, you're excluding people who should be included. You're uprooting wheat as you're pulling out, and all this with these noble ambitions, going and pulling out all the weeds, you're killing wheat. He debunks the myth of the absolutely pure gathering. It's inherent in the very nature of the kingdom that Jesus was declaring, is that there'll always be a mixture, but in time, God will reveal the wheat and the weeds. Leave it in God's hands. See, there's two concepts here. That seem, and they are related, But it's a matter of what do you have as the very core principle? The Pharisees had as their very core principle purity. And they lived that out. Jesus had at the very core of his being and the core of his community was redemptive love, which leads to purity. But if the core value is redemptive love, that leads to a very different way of dealing with the world than if your core value is purity. They're related, but what's at the heart can lead to very, very different outcomes. Jesus was accepting, including, gathering people. He was loving them. Not even as a ploy or a strategy to convert them. He did it because it's who he was. And on the other hand, he didn't do it just as a statement or a demonstration of how inclusive he was. He did it because it's who he was. And it's the love of God that he came to live out. And so we're not called to do this as a ploy to convert people. We're not called to do it as some kind of political statement about how inclusive we are. We're called to do it as a sincere demonstration of our faith in Jesus Christ. A sincere demonstration of our faith in Jesus Christ. And because of our confidence that his way is the best way, even if it's messy at times. His way is the best way. So we can cooperate with God in the ways of the kingdom. So if this year is the year of gather. You know, as a community, one of the things that we want this year to be is a year for asking if there are things we're doing that are putting up barriers to people coming to Jesus. And I don't have the answers, I just have a question. And I want this to be a year that in different settings we're asking that question. You know, are we, by the way we go about, and I know it'll be unintentional, right? It'll be unintentional, but sometimes we may be doing things that are putting up barriers to people coming to Jesus. We want to knock those things down. Surely as we want to knock that building down over there, we want to knock down. This is more important than that. Breaking down barriers. I loved when we had our midweek meetings in September. I love, this is one of my favorite statements from the whole time, we had a lot of great discussion, but Allison Hood said, I want to be a part of a community that makes Jesus as accessible as he actually was when he was physically present. Do I think we want to be that? Yeah. I also think we have a long way to go. May this be a year of asking ourselves some really probing questions about how we interact with our community. I think churches can too easily become places where Christians go to hide from the world. Rather than being a place, becoming a gathering where the world comes to find acceptance and healing. Where the world comes, world including me and you, that we come to find acceptance and healing, that we come to find salvation. But also this kind of gathering begins in our homes too. I think in the same way that churches can be places where Christians hide from the world, our homes can have become places all too often where we just go to hide from the world. I want this to be a year of that we discuss ways that our homes would no longer be places to hide from the world, but havens to which the world comes for acceptance and healing. I'll call it this, a year of radical hospitality. God has blessed us with our homes, not just for us, but to be places where the kingdom of the heavens breaks in on this world. And people can find something that's different. They find something because it's what they're looking for, because it's the way they were created to live. Jesus says, on this rock, on the foundation that I am the Christ, the Son of the living God, I will build my church, my ecclesia, my gathering. And the gates of Hades will not prove stronger than it. Jesus is building a gathering. We're a part of that gathering. So that we gather. But as we gather, we are people that have the heart of Jesus to gather other people. We are here the way Jesus came to show the wretched of the earth that God was on their side. We are here to show everyone that God is on their side. So our community of faith, our gathering, this building, the homes that we live, the communities, the schools, the offices where they work can be sacred places. Havens that people can come for acceptance and healing, and God will use us, brothers and sisters of Jesus, to do the same thing Jesus did, is to show all the people of earth that God is on their side. Amen.